everyone. Welcome back to Why Am I So Happy? Paula V here. Today joining me is an amazing man named Jacob Needleman. And Jacob is professor of philosophy at San Francisco State University, former visiting professor at Duke's Graduate School of Business Leadership in Monterrey, Mexico, and former director of the Center for the Study of New Religions at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California. He was educated in philosophy at Harvard, Yale, and the University of Freiburg, Germany. He has also served as research associate at the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, as a research fellow at Union Theological Seminary, as adjunct professor of medical ethics at the University of California Medical School, and as a guest professor of religious studies at the Sorbonne, Paris. Oh, he is the author of many books, and we are going to have some great conversation today with Jacob. First, Jacob, I want to welcome you to the show and tell you I'm so honored to have you here today.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Now, Jacob, over the years, I would love to begin with a little discussion. You have written many books about philosophy and the crisis of meaning in our present world. But what prompted you to write a novel about an adolescent boy and a club for teenage magicians? What prompted that book? That thought?
Well, I started my writing career quite young, and I wrote a huge, mammoth, unpublishable novel that was rejected by every publisher in the galaxy. And so I was always wanted to deal with stories, with writing fiction. And when that didn't seem to work out, I was teaching philosophy in one of the most dynamic areas in the world, in the San Francisco Bay Area. And shortly after my start there, there came to be a lot of new religious movements in the air, which influenced the whole world, actually. And so I started writing books about philosophy, about these new religious movements and about other things connected with that. And then after each book I wrote, there was an element of the novelist in me as I wrote it, telling stories and so forth. And at a certain point, after a couple of books, I decided to treat myself and write a novel. And I was a teenage magician, actually, and I belonged to this club when I was 15 years old or so. And I figured, look, I'm just going to tell my story and have fun writing a book, writing a yarn. And as I started writing this yarn about this teenage boy going into this very interesting group of kids, of teenagers, studying magic under an older young person and a mysterious woman in the background and a magic teacher in a magic shop, I started writing about that, and suddenly the book started to become serious. It was still fun, but something happened, and the whole meaning of the book turned into something deeply, deeply metaphysical, deeply mystical, and a struggle between the ego and the spirit. It became a novel about a young teenager struggling between his wish for truth and his wish to be famous and well-known and successful. And those struggle between those two parts of myself became the theme of the whole novel. While still on the surface, I wanted to make it enjoyable, entertaining, and suspenseful. So that's where it was. The novel, the magic was part of my life when I was young. And as I wrote this novel called Sorcerers, the story itself began to reflect my interest in spiritual inner work and metaphysical mystical ideas.
Oh, and it is such a fun read. I personally, I really enjoyed the book, but I did not know that it was based on you. I mean, there's a big part of you in that book. How fun
Absolutely.
is that?
It was great. It was great. So I never had a better time writing in my life, and I'm looking now to write another something like that. But I'm also interested in keeping the book on the plane of ideas, spiritual, philosophical ideas.
Oh, I love it. And it is just a fun read, and the experiences. That must have been quite amazing to go through that and learn what you did with the magicians. Is there a particular story of that time in your life that you'd like to share with us?
Well, it's the story is in the book, of course, but there was a, yes, there was a, the kids were practicing magic, and we all had an annual show that the club was called the Sorcerer's Apprentices. It was in Philadelphia, and we used to visit professional magic shows and professional magicians, and we gave every year we gave an annual show, and we were all very nervous up on the stage with people paying to get in and so forth. And there was, as I describe it in the book, the teacher, the young man, but an adult, represented for me something of this, the symbol of someone who wished to be well thought of, who wished to be famous, who wished to be special. And the other side of my life was this teacher, this hard-nosed, gruff, but very deep, wise man, was in the magic shop selling me tricks. And I had to choose, in a way, between the two of them. And the final show, the final thing, I don't think I'm spoiling anything for it. We had a magic show, all the family was there, they all bought tickets, there was a big audience in the theater in Philadelphia. And the young adult who was the leader of us came on and did his great magic act. And he, one of the tricks was to produce a bowl of fire, which is a well-known magic trick on the stage. And he was a very accomplished magician. But in this particular time, he made a mistake. And the cape, the cloth that covered the bowl, as he whisked it away, caught fire and lit up the whole, all the curtains started burning, and the fire, all the young kids, the fat ones, the tall ones, the skinny ones, the ugly ones, the pretty ones, the nervous ones, all of us were trying to get buckets of water to pour over all the curtain so it wouldn't burn the house down. And all the three or four rows in the front rows, including our relatives, got soaked with the water as we poured it onto the curtain. The young adult who was the leader of it became very humbled by the whole thing. It changed his whole life.
Wow.
And it changed my life by letting me see what I really wanted was not so much to be a big deal, but to really understand the truth, to really find the good.
Oh, wow. Oh, Jacob.
That was a very literal thing that happened in my childhood there.
Yes. Oh, what?
And since then, studying magic, I learned a lot about human beings, and I learned how easy it is to fool people. This was one of the strangest things to learn. I didn't even appreciate it that much until as I got older, began to take my place in the world, that people, you could fool them almost as any time you wanted, any way you wanted practically, as long as you knew how. And the big secret of magic is the manipulation of another person's attention.
Wow.
If you could draw their attention in a certain direction, you could practically take their pants off them without their knowing it. It's amazing. Amazing lesson in life.
Yes, that is so interesting. And in the book, The Sorcerers, the hero,
yes,
Elliot Appelman, he joins this club of teenage magicians. And then amazingly, he discovers that he himself actually has real magical powers and the ability to read minds. Did anything like that happen to you? Were you able to read minds?
I'm sorry to say that is the fictional part.
Oh.
Concentrate very hard now. I can probably drive. No, I'm kidding. It was the fiction part. Because as he's showing and displaying his tricks to his father, who's a very severe guy, he messes it up and he gets very horribly embarrassed. And suddenly he realizes that he's supposed to read the mind of someone who's picked a card. And as he starts the trick, he starts him to just make a real comedy scene out of it and make a mistake and all that. So he starts reading their minds and pretending to read their minds. And he was going to make it a big, funny kind of trick. And suddenly he realizes he actually can read their minds. And he comes out reading their minds and blows everyone away. And from that point on, the book gets really serious in one way, and I think very important. So then the book got a bit serious.
Yes.
Because not only was he able to read their thoughts, but he was also unwillingly, in a way, able to feel their suffering.
Yes.
To feel what their suffering was, what their emotions were. And that became really difficult because it was a mixture of extraordinary feeling of power and at the same time sorrow and difficulty, because he had to suffer what the people were suffering, whose minds and hearts he was reading. And that became the metaphor of the rest of the book.
Because he was feeling that.
He was both together, and he had to choose between the good and the evil in that sense, from egoism to also to understanding and virtue.
Yes. I mean, the book really is so complex in so many ways of what it shares and what it brings in with this young man's adventures.
Well, that's good, because it was a joy to write the book.
Yes.
Carrying my notebook around, I usually would type it was before computers when I started it, and I would usually type everything, but this was so exciting and I had to carry my notebook around and write wherever I got a moment, though. It was a lot of fun. And when we meet someday, I'll show you some tricks.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that. I would love some Jacob tricks. Well, everyone, I'm afraid we have to pop out quickly for a commercial, but I will be right back with Jacob. Jacob, we will be right back.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome back, everyone. Paula V here. I am chatting with Jacob Needleman. We are discussing one of his latest books, Sorcerers, and we're having so much fun talking about the adventures of Elliot with becoming a magician. And I would love to ask you, Jacob, about, do you think the study of magic is useful beyond the fun of it? What can it teach a person, particularly a young person, about human nature? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is a lot of fun, but something behind it is deep, much deeper than just fun for a teenager. Of course, I wanted to be special, I wanted to show off, I wanted to meet girls, all that kind of thing. But underneath it, there was something, even these tricks, some of them very shabby in a way, there's just special apparatus or sleight of hand, which I liked very much. But somewhere there inside, when I was trying to perform magic, there was a feeling inside that I couldn't name, as though I wanted these magic tricks to be really magic, to be really inexplicable, to touch on something that is an aspect of wonder and actually the miraculous. Whenever I was doing a trick, somewhere I was imagining it was actually being magic. And when I stuck a pencil through a a piece of glass, and the glass didn't break, and the hole didn't appear. It came out whole because of the trick, the way the apparatus was constructed. I would always be imagining it was actually happening. The magic was actually happening. So it echoed an aspect of myself, and I think of many of us, this wish for the magical, this wish for something much greater than us that we can't understand in an ordinary way, but which we are beckoned and called to try to understand. And especially with a community of fellow, imagine a community of fellow teenage magicians showing their tricks to each other, trying to outdo each other, and yet each one of them probably has this in this deep yearning for the miraculous inside of them. So that helped me to. Then, as I said, the other thing on the other side of this all is how easy it was to fool people. If you knew a few moves, if you were dexterous, and if you were something of an entertainer, which people want. People come to magic tricks. They don't want to come to figure out things so much. They want to be entertained by coming in touch with a taste of the miraculous, a taste of the wonder. And that taught me a lot, too, because when I later got to being a teacher of philosophy, particularly mystical thought and great spiritual teachings of the world, I began to feel almost everybody has a side of them that wishes to touch something higher than themselves, something of the mysterious, in order to live a more fully, more full and fulfilling life. And this touches on your whole program's theme about happiness. That what'd you say?
Yes, I say yes, yes, I agree.
I don't think we can be fully happy unless we're in touch with something greater than ourselves, our ordinary selves, our ordinary ego. And also, even more, that we need to be able to serve, to love another. And I began to realize that just relating to people and opening to them and trying to understand how to communicate even magic tricks, but also great ideas, great teachings, that opening to another person, that listening to the other person's depths, that is the beginning of love. And we can never be happy unless we're serving and giving something. We're not born to take, we're born to give. And that in a way echoed something of the magician in me too.
Oh, I love that. I love that, Jacob. And yes, you know, so much joy can be gained in service to others and giving. And I also love that you mentioned listening, because I really believe it's so important to give and serve and care, but also to take the time to listen to others and communicate and pick up on where they're at as well.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, listening is a discovery I made very long ago as a teacher. Listening is the first step of love, I think. We may not love our neighbor. That's a great Christian ideal that most of us can't conform to very well. We can hardly love our friends sometimes. But listening is something we can all try to do, and that's the first plank in the bridge that leads to love, I think.
Oh, I love that. I love that. In the book, Jacob, Elliot is torn between the influence of two powerful magicians.
Yes.
The story of his struggle underlies his coming of age and personal growth. What is this struggle meant to convey more universally to every developing man or woman, to everyone? What is that meant to convey?
It's meant to convey that we all have two fundamental sides to us. One, to get along in the world and do well, and make a success, have a family, children that are healthy and normal, and get by and get along and do well and create and all that, which we all need to do. That's basically one whole side of ourselves. There's another fundamental side of ourselves that is yearning for some contact with what is bigger, higher, more mysterious than anything else. And that's a deep part of our nature. It's uniquely human. It's more psychologists, anthropologists, know to define people in terms of wish and desire for survival, for pleasure, for achievement, for winning. That is to underestimate human beings fatally. Very, very bad idea. It's circulating in our culture. Actually, the deepest part of human being is expressed in this yearning for truth and for service to other people. That's frustrated. We can never be fully happy, don't you think?
Yes, yes.
So that's what the message of the book really is about. His coming of age, which was at the end of the book, and the power is taken away from him, and he's told now to grow up and be a man.
Yes.
And that I think is to serve and search for the truth.
With just a couple moments left, Jacob, what last words would you like to leave with the listeners today?
Oh, what a question. What a question is. I would say, try to find what I would call philosophical friends. That means people you care for, but who come together mainly in order to search for truth together. Maybe it starts with reading a good book together, or it starts with walking through nature and together, that there's we all wish to come in touch with what is greater than ourselves, but it's almost impossible to go the whole way all alone. We need other people with another meaning to friendship, which is not just to have fun together, help each other physically, et cetera, which is very important. We also need to listen to each other's spiritual, metaphysical yearnings and support each other in that. And that can lead to more than we imagine.
Oh, beautiful, Jacob, beautiful. I'm just so grateful to have had you on the show today. And for the listeners out there, if you want to connect with Jacob or order one of his books, his website information is on the show page. Please check him out. If you have any questions, you can email me at paula@wellnessinspired.com. I look forward to reading more of your books, Jacob, and talking with you again. I have so enjoyed you today, and I am so grateful.
Well, thank you, Paula. It's a joy to meet you.
Oh, thank you. You as well. To our listeners out there, love, hugs, blessings. A happy day to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Everyone, welcome to Why Am I So Happy? Paula V here. Right now, I am going to share with you two beautiful women. I have with me today Lori Payne and Catherine Miller. We are going to be discussing the joy and happiness of being a grandparent. And that's something that I enjoy on a regular basis. It's priceless. And another reason for having these two on the show today, they are going to share information on an amazing project that they are working on in the state of Washington, which is going to benefit grandparents, grandchildren, families, helping families be connected. So I'm very excited to hear about this project and everything you have going on. First off, I would like to say, Catherine and Lori, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Paula. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to share with your listeners what's really going on in Washington State. It affects other people in the country as well. Thank you so much, Paul, for having us today. This is so very special and extremely important, as Lori said, just to be able to reach the people of Washington and share our story, but yet give them a sense of hope if they are in the same situation, that knowing that families do matter,
yes.
Grandparents matter.
Yes, and what you're doing and your inspiration and love, that is great feedback for everyone around the country and around the world. I love it.
Thank
what,
you.
What I would like to begin with, ladies, is I ask this question to both of you. Why are you so happy about being a grandmother?
Well, Paula, I'm going to take it first. This is Lori. I'm so happy about being a grandmother because, to me, it's a real honor. It's a privilege. It is a position that I cherish. I mean, I get a front row seat to watch a brand new precious being come into the world and slowly transform into the unique and the individual that they become. And, you know, every day is a new day that leaves an impression and shapes their development. Every day brings a new gift, a smile that looks like mommy, or a sound that sounds like dada. And then all of a sudden you hear them say Nana. And I realize that they recognize me and that they're actually happy and excited to see me. And it just makes that bond even more special. And everything is new to a young child. When I'm showing my granddaughter some of my favorite things from my childhood, I'm teaching her something that she hasn't discovered yet. And so in that way, I'm enriching her life. But she enriches my life by teaching or reminding me of something that I had forgotten about, something I haven't thought about for years. Like I'll take her to ride the carousel at one of the malls over here. And I used to love to do that myself as a kid, and I just hadn't thought about it for such a long time. And so it's those simple pleasures, going for a walk, picking wildflowers, looking at the stars, watching a train pass by, and even going through a car wash. It makes it more important, more meaningful, more delightful, and it just enriches my life. And so it just thrills me.
Yes, and I have to share a story with you saying that. Just last week, I had my four-year-old granddaughter over for the day. We had a sleepover, and we went to the car wash. She was so excited to go through the car wash. And then she's, oh, the car wash smells like bubble gum. So, Grammy, the car wash smelled like bubble gum. And, you know, yes, it's so true that grandchildren enrich our lives so much. I just love it.
Yeah, me too. So, Catherine, how about you?
Well, this is Catherine, as Lori said. And first of all, I just want to say that I truly believe that there is no love greater than a grandparent's love for their grandchildren. It's amazing and it's unexplainable. It's just so beautiful. And, you know, I'm so happy to be a grandmother because I know that I've made a difference in my grandchildren's lives, and that's extremely important to me. I know they feel my love. When I see their faces light up, when I see them, and they are so excited to tell me about their day and what's going on. Actually, I remember the day my grandson Danny and I planted the peach tree at our house, and we called it Danny's tree. He loved gardening with me. This is Nana. I love gardening with my Nana, he says. And he would tell anybody who was listening about his tree and how much he missed his Nana. Or the time when I was teaching him how to do the two-step dance. And Danny said to me, Nana, I don't ever want to dance alone. I only want to dance with you.
Aww.
That was such a blessing. And it still brings tears to my eyes because it was such a beautiful, loving moment with him. And, you know, and I actually recently received an unexpected surprise from a friend regarding that dance. And she said that she recorded Danny and I dancing, a video recorded it. And she gave it to me. So now I have a digital memory of our dance, and I hope to share that memory with Danny someday. And, you know, it might have a 10-year-old granddaughter. She's beautiful. Her name is Kylie, and she loves to share personal things with only me and won't share them with anyone else, including her mom, who's my daughter, which makes me feel very special. And, you know, she's just a precious gem. And my grandson, Isaiah, who loves to play football, he's a jokester, and he likes to be silly. And for some reason, he calls everybody he meets Jeff. I figured out why. He just likes to call you Jeff. He calls me Nana Jeff or Papa Jeff. He's just a funny kid. And he's one of a kind. So this is a precious moment that made some of my best memories that will last a lifetime. And I know they have and will for my grandchildren.
Oh, I love it. It is just so beautiful and so, it's beyond words what it does for our lives having our grandchildren. And I would love to ask you ladies, do you have fond memories of your own grandparents that you've carried through your life?
Well, yes, I do. The only grandparent that I really knew was my maternal grandmother. And my fond memories of her were from my early childhood. She kept one of my older dolls at her house, and it was a doll that was well worn. You know, it had been through a lot. And but when I would come to visit her, and she lived in a different city, so I didn't see her, you know, on a real regular basis. But I would show up, and she had cleaned up this doll and set the hair with, you know, curlers and put a little makeup on it to just kind of spruce it up. And it was, you know, it was so delightful to come in and discover this doll that's been revamped. And the other thing I remember about her was that, well, she was really a good cook, but she baked bread. And, oh my gosh, you know how great that is to just go into somebody's home when they've been baking bread, you know. And so those are the things I think of when I think of her. Those just little things like that.
Beautiful.
The smell of baking bread or cookies is beautiful.
Yes.
Well, for myself, you know, I had always wanted grandparents and to experience that special bond. My grandparents died before I was born, so I really never knew anything else. Growing up, my friends had grandparents, and they showed up at school events, games, you know, family outings and dinners where the whole family gathered, or they had fun and shared their lives as a family unit, as it should be. It was so foreign to me, but I wanted this, I craved this, I desired to have this. It was just such a, you know, a beautiful thing. You know, and I didn't have a typical size family that my friends did. And truthfully, my family units and things weren't always stable or predictable either. I could see the positive difference their grandparents, my friends, made in their lives. And it was, again, it was a beautiful thing. And, you know, I know the difference between having grandparents and, you know, and seeing how they can enrich your life. Because of that.
Yes, yes.
And speaking about enriching things that kids do that enrich our lives, I just like to share a couple of things about my granddaughter, who's now 5 years old, that at the time she was just three, and my husband and I took her out to sushi. And it was just the three of us. And we sat at the bar right in front of where the gentleman prepares the fish, you know. And so we sat down, and she kind of stands up, and she says to the guy, "This is Nana, and this is Papa, and I'm Madeline." And I mean, it came from out of nowhere. You know, it's these cute little surprise moments.
Yes.
That, and the guy, you know, he just was so taken with her, you know. You know, her,
it's just
she was his new best friend, you know.
So yes. They're just so fun. It really is. Just makes our hearts swell. It really does. It makes our hearts swell. Well, I'm afraid, ladies, we have to pop out for a break. But when we come back,
okay.
I'm excited to hear about your project. So, everyone, we will be right back. Thank you.
Thank you.
And welcome back. Paula V here. I am speaking with Catherine Miller and Lori Payne. We are discussing the joy and happiness of being a grandparent and what that does for us and having our grandchildren in our lives and, you know, the importance of family. And on this note, before we begin discussing the Amazing People's Initiative that you have initiated, Catherine, I would like to ask you, your two youngest grandsons have been in foster care for the past 3 years. Will you tell us briefly what happened, how that came about?
Yes, I can, and thank you for asking. Sadly, my son and his girlfriend, who are the parents of my two grandsons, Danny and Lane, were abusing drugs, heroin and methamphetamine. I was extremely concerned about Danny's safety. I was the one who reported them to CPS because of that concern. I knew that this was a dangerous environment situation, and as a matter of fact, Lane, who hadn't even been born yet, he was in danger because the mom was abusing drugs while she was pregnant, so he was born addicted to drugs.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, I felt like I didn't have a choice, but I didn't understand the system or realize that I would need an attorney. So I didn't get one. I figured that the court would naturally want to talk to me about becoming the boy's legal guardian, because after all, I am the grandmother, and Danny knows me and loves me, and we have that special bond. And I was actually very shocked to find out that I had absolutely no rights as a grandmother in the state of Washington. I was basically treated like I was invisible. I had no choice, no choices, no voice in the court. And, you know, it's been tormenting me, you know, for the last 3 years, knowing that they've gone from foster home to foster home and foster home and possibly adopted. It's been tormenting me not knowing where they are, where, you know, if they're together or if they're safe or with a stable, loving family, which is so extremely important to me.
And you made that choice to turn them in out of love to help those grandkids.
Yes. And it was a hard decision. And I don't question that decision. I did it first because it was so painful. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, my son's still trying to get sober and the mom is, she's nowhere to be found, and it's not a good situation still. So I know, and as a matter of fact, I recently received a blessing from a friend of mine who actually saw the boys not too long ago. And she reported to me that they were together and they appeared to be very happy. This, again, was a huge weight, you know, off my shoulders and an answer to my prayer, because I've been so tormented just not knowing anything about them, because I don't have any rights to even ask.
Yeah, so Catherine, they won't even tell you where they are, and you don't have a right to visit them?
No visitation. I don't even have the right. I can ask them how are they doing, if they're doing well, give them Christmas presents, but I will never, ever hear the answers to those questions. I do not have a right to know anything.
Unbelievable. So it really, really is.
It really is.
In fact, I mean, you were saying that you don't really know if they even get the
Christmas
present.
That 1 year, it was 2 years ago, I loaded up the CPS adoptive CPS worker, back of her Jeep with tons of Christmas presents and all of Danny's toys that he had at our house, and a very special inchworm that I bought for actually myself, because I lost mine as a child and I wanted to give it to a foster child. Little did I know, I gave it to my own grandson who was in foster care, Lane. Anyway, she said she was going to take pictures and of the boys opening the presents. And to this day, they say I don't have any rights, and they never showed me any pictures whether they've ever even received those gifts.
Yes.
And It's hard. It's extremely hard.
Unbelievable.
You know, it is. And but you know, I do have hope and faith, and I do believe, without a doubt, that one day, you know, we will be reunited, and I will have that beautiful sense of peace and knowing that my family is complete. You know, I have to believe that. That's what keeps me going, and having, you know, wonderful, beautiful, you know, driving friends like Lori, who, you know, we support each other, but she has just been an amazing, just a catalyst and a person that, you know, has just set the finish on fire. And I'm so very blessed to, you know, be by her side and working on this. So, thank you.
Fantastic. Yes. Lori, please tell us, I know you've sponsored People's Initiative 1431 to restore a law for grandparents, grandchild visitation in Washington State. And what this will do for grandparents and the children, my goodness. So tell us about that, and tell us how the listeners can get involved to support this beautiful initiative.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, you know, grandparents who have been cut off from their grandchildren are heartbroken. And if you ask them why, they'll tell you that they're just really worried about the grandchildren because, you know, grandparents are adults, and so they have coping mechanisms. They have the ability to go seek counseling. But young children, they don't have those things. They don't have a voice. They're just kind of left wondering what happened. And, you know, why are grandma and grandpa, who they love, suddenly absent from their lives? You know,
exactly.
Where do they go? Are they mad? Are they mad at me? You know, they might be thinking that. You know, they're just wondering, did I do something wrong? Did grandma and grandpa stop loving me? And these are the thoughts that haunt these grandparents. I mean, it's really torturing when you can't communicate with your grandchildren in these situations that come up. So restoring a law in our state that allows deserving grandparents to gain visitation of their alienated grandchildren will help remedy this problem. So we're talking about visitation. We're not talking about gaining custody. That's a separate issue. And the way this initiative is written, and it had to be written this way because of a court case that happened in the year 2000 here in Washington State. I don't know if I want to go into big long explanation about it, but it was Troxell versus Granville, and the Troxells were the grandparents, and they were seeking visitation using the law that we actually used to have. And the judge actually found in their favor and granted them visitation. And in their case, their son had committed suicide. He was the father of the children. And the surviving daughter-in-law was Granville. She didn't like that the court was able to give them visitation because she was kind of wanting to cut them out of her life. She wanted to start over. Anyway, so she appealed, and the appellate court sent our Washington State law, the old one, to the U.S. Supreme Court. They reviewed it and decided that it was unconstitutional because it was breathtakingly broad. And the reason it was breathtakingly broad was because it was written in such a way that any third-party non-parent could actually seek visitation of a child if they had a significant relationship with them. And so... that included neighbors, teachers, coaches, babysitters, and so that's why it was too broad and it was unconstitutional. And so this initiative has been written to meet the standards that were set by that Troxell case. And so the law will not be a slam dunk for anyone petitioning the court for visitation. They'll have to meet stringent qualifications written into the initiative, and in other words, well, like the new law
assumes that a fit parent has the right to determine who may or may not spend time with their children. And the petitioner, which would be like the grandparents, cannot have any history of abuse or problems with the law. They cannot reside with somebody that has a history of abuse. So these are really stringent.
So good ground rules.
Have to be met.
Yes, that is fantastic. Lori, how can the listeners support this or contact you to help you with this initiative?
Yes. Well, we have a website. It's giftsinlawstate.org. I think you're going to have that available for them to see. Is that right?
Yes, that will be on the, yes, everyone can see that on the show page as well.
Okay, and see, we urgently need people who care about this issue to volunteer, to help collect signatures in their area. We need to get 300,000 signatures by the end of June in order to qualify to place this initiative on the November 2016 ballot. So we, right now we've got about 100 volunteers in the state of Washington collecting signatures. I'd really like to triple that number. Yes. In order to get to our quota that is needed. Yes. And we're doing this as an all-volunteer grassroots effort. And so it's quite an undertaking.
Yes, a big shout-out to all the Washington State residents that this is something very important, and I hope to see a lot of people involved in this and helping you. Ladies, I'm afraid we are going to have to say goodbye. I want to thank you so much for sharing this information and allowing the beautiful discussion of the joy of grandparenting.
Well, thank you, Paula, very much, Paula. We are so delighted to spend this time with you and having the opportunity to get to reach out to your listeners and talk about this issue. We sure appreciate it. Definitely a blessing. Thank you so much.
I'm honored and happy to be a vessel to share your beautiful message. To all the listeners, thank you. Love, hugs, blessings. A happy day to everyone. Paula V saying goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye.